the dark days are done and the bright days are here. My sunny one shines so sincere. Sunny one so true. I love you.
Our next guest is one of those rare talents who has something to say and can say it funny. He's a writer-performer on the new Laugh-In and one of the most popular, outspoken, and entertaining personalities on the local news here in Los Angeles. He's won a half a dozen Emmys as a film critic and host of his own shows. Let's welcome Mr. John Barber, right over there.
Thank you. This is John Barber. That was Syreeta singing Sonny and Frank Sinatra saying, here's Johnny, the night he hosted The Tonight Show. It is Monday, April the 3rd, 2 days after April Fool's Day. But if you try to figure out what's going on in America today, every day for the government and media seems to be April Fool's Day. Our country would have to improve considerably just to be considered a mess. What America needs more than anything right now is a truthful, moral hero. But the system and media and government have made it impossible for them to surface. They are either shot down by weapons or by words. In my film, The American Media and the Second Assassination of President John F. Kennedy, Part 2 of the Garrison Tapes, which will stun and inform you, opens May 26th at the Music Hall Theater in Beverly Hills, 3 days before John F. Kennedy's 100th birthday. In it, you will hear that in America, liars run for office while truth tellers run for their lives. Snowden went to Russia, my guest to Bangladesh. Mark Twain, my writing hero, also quoted in the film, said, "Physical courage for people is easy. It's moral courage that's difficult." And then he added, "The difference between a cat and a lie is that a cat only has 9 lives." How brilliant is that observation in today's world? And he made it 100 years ago at the start of America's empire building. My 4 morally courageous heroes are, of course, John Kennedy and Martin Luther King, who tried to stop America's empire building war machinery, which sadly stopped them, and New Orleans DA Jim Garrison, whose words and facts in the film will bring you to your feet, exposing those who killed them and those who still protect the killers. And next to those two, number 4, my lucky number, my guest, making a much missed second appearance, the most courageous member of Congress I know of, and along with my cohort, Joe Satilli, the most knowledgeable person I know of when it comes to talking about and observing what's going on in the United States of America. When in Congress, she introduced bills calling for the release of all the CIA files on the murders of Martin Luther King and Tupac Shakur, raised questions about 9-1-1, and because of their lies leading to Iraq, moved to impeach Bush, Cheney, and Rice. With that kind of courage, she deserves a Medal of Honor. So it is indeed an honor to welcome her back, my one living, remaining hero, Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to come on your show. You know, I love you so much. And your opening statement was just absolutely fabulous. So much humor. Well, really about so much sadness, because the state of our affairs in the U.S. is extremely sad for those of us who care.
Yes, you know, back in, it's stunning, but back in the 70s, Walt Kelly, the cartoonist in Pogo, says, "I have seen the enemy, and it is us." And it grows more profound as time goes by. Where are you? Are you in Bangladesh?
Yes, I'm on the other side of the planet.
And why did you pick Bangladesh? Any country would have welcomed you.
Well, the unfortunately, it's the United States that doesn't welcome me.
I mean, if you were going to pull a Snowden on us, you could have. I mean, Russia would have loved you. Loved you.
And, you know, I love Russia, too, because I have lots of friends in Russia. And I'm trying to reach right now, literally, as we were speaking, a friend of mine who's in St. Petersburg, trying to make sure he's okay. So,
Oh my goodness. Oh my.
Yes.
God. And what time is it in Bangladesh?
It is Tuesday morning, 10 minutes after 6.
Why are you up so? Well, thank you for being up so early, but I saw that you were up at 5 o'clock informing the world of stuff.
I you can say I'm an early riser. My mother always, you know, I made a mistake with my son because I always, my mother always woke me up in, you know, early in the morning. And so I became by habit an early riser. I rise with the sun. And so I said, okay, I'm going to be lenient, you know, this sort of modern mom. And I'll let my son sleep later. And he just takes full advantage of it. You know, I've never seen a kid. Well, you know, a kid to my age, he's 30 years old now, but I've never seen anybody sleep so much.
Let me tell you something. I don't care if he's 32 or 42 or 12. He's still your baby.
And that's right.
Well, I can tell that, first of all, by the way you talk about him. And when you were on the air with me with your son the last time, Coy, why the name Coy and how is he doing?
Well, he's doing just fine. He's named after his dad. His dad is a Jamaican. He was born in Jamaica. Oh, man, the consternation that my mother greeted me with when I said, well, I'm going down to Jamaica and have my baby. And, you know, it was just like, you know, that was a part of my revolutionary act, right? I can go to the third world. I can have a baby. My father supported me 100%, said giving childbirth is the most natural thing on the planet. And he said, this is what my dad said. He said, I could give birth in a cornfield if I had to.
You know, I heard once of a couple that was 82 years of age, and they waited that, they divorced when they were 82, and when asked why they waited so long, they said they waited for the children to die. They didn't want to disappoint the children. Speaking of sons, my son came up over this weekend to see me, and in 3 weeks, as a birthday present, he is taking me to Scotland to play St. Andrews as a gift. Isn't that wonderful?
Now,
I'll tell you something that I experienced just over this weekend. My son is a writer on a show called Criminal Minds Beyond Borders with Gary Sinise, whose politics I don't care for, but he's a very fine actor, and it's a really, really a pretty decent show. And he is also a co-executive producer. There might be a Writers Guild strike, but anyway, 2 days ago, he was informed by the creator of the show, a woman, by the way, which is wonderful, that if the show is picked up, which I think it will be, he will become second in charge as a co-executive producer. And if it's not picked up, he will be assigned as a writer to Criminal Minds, which has picked up. And I said to my son on the spur of the moment, now you can imagine, Cynthia, how much I love my film and how proud I am, and I hope it does well. But I must tell you, the success of my son makes me a lot happier than any success I could ever have with the film.
You know, that those are the words of a true parent. And, you know, I just think that we give and, you know, parents give and give and give and really don't expect anything in return except that our children will accept our gifts. you know, with a kind of grace and dignity, and then move on to make the world a better place. My son just sent me a photograph. Well, he actually didn't do it. His girlfriend did. Sent me a photograph of him with a new T-shirt. And it says, "Keep calm, just keep farming." And, you know, that's what my son is doing, community gardens around Washington, D.C., particularly in Southeast D.C. and Anacostia, where it's technically a food desert.
It is a wonderful and most meaningful thing that he could do, honest to God. And, you know, for me, I did not want to be a parent because coming from a severely broken home long before it was popular, I didn't know what kind of father I would be. And, you know, the worst kind of people to be around are comics. And I was a comic. And so, you know, because we're only absorbed with ourselves. The wonderful thing about my son's birth is it took me out of me. And I had something else to worry about. So in essence, it gave my life a purpose that I didn't realize and made it that much richer. Okay. I have always wondered, what do you do in Bangladesh to earn a living?
Well, I'm teaching. And the vice chancellor of the university in 2014 invited me to speak at the graduation. And I haven't left.
What do you teach?
I teach in two different departments. I teach political science, introduction to political science to undergraduate students. And I teach in the business school. I teach entrepreneurship, leadership, and organizational change.
Well, both classes must be filled to the brim because, I mean, nobody knows more about that first subject than you do. And a question I have always wanted to ask you, because you're the only the second person I ever heard of who questioned perhaps the CIA's and the government's involvement in the murder of Tupac Shakur. And I don't know if you've heard of this fellow. His name is John Potash. He's been on the show a couple of times, and he's written a book about drugs as weapons against the United States and has a long chapter on Tupac. How and why did you get involved with that?
Well, I got involved with the situation with Tupac, one, because his mother came to me, but also, of course, because I've had this very long interest in the COINTELPRO era of the FBI and the United States government, and in particular, its various targets. So COINTELPRO targets were not only political actors. Well, I guess they all were political actors, but they were not only just politicians. The COINTELPRO targets were political activists and also, as I call them, cultural icons. And these are people who actually, at the end of the day, they have more of an ability to move people than do politicians or even activists. So when you get a conscious cultural icon, someone who's an entertainer, that becomes a problem for the state.
Like John Lennon,
exactly. And so you have the situation with Tupac, where his mother was a member of the Black Panther Party, and who was one of the New York 21 whose legal prowess and command of the facts and the situation at the time, so that she was able to argue herself out of prison. So, yes, that's right. She defended herself and got out of prison. So we know that he was steeped in the politics of revolution, in the politics of social change. And his father figure was Mutulu Shakur, who is still in prison. He was in prison for a long time in Atlanta, where I went to visit him. But then he was moved where the other remaining Black Panther political party, I mean, political prisoners are located up in Colorado at, you know, the hard max prison. So he had everything in order to become a political leader, to use to parlay his popularity as a rapper into a political activist. And actually, that's exactly what he was doing. First with a sort of code movement that he created among prisoners, because of course, you know, he was harassed and sent to prison a lot. And then secondly, he said that he was going to take his 6 million fans up to Capitol Hill. Now, imagine the U.S. government couldn't stand the few thousands that Martin Luther King Jr. was taking up for the Poor People's Campaign back in 1968. So if they couldn't stand a few thousand in 1968, you know that they couldn't stand a few million in the 1990s, because he wrote his letter. One of his songs was Letter to the President, and that was a letter to Bill Clinton saying, you came through the hood and you made all these promises and you haven't kept them, Mr. President.
You know something, Cynthia? It dawns on me the really, really sad thing about Tupac Shakur's success for me is that it's entirely different from, first of all, Martin Luther King's, because every white man in America knew who Martin Luther King was. Almost no white people, unless those who went to some movies, knew who Tupac Shakur was. And, you know, I'm also a little ashamed of myself when I talk about my four heroes. It's the fact that probably one of the greatest in history would have had to have been Paul Robeson, because Paul Robeson fought on his own. He didn't have anybody next to him. And it also has stunned me, while all these billionaire Black entertainers from Oprah on to Spike Lee have never made a film or even a play about probably the greatest Black political artist, activist in the country, and that's Paul Robeson. Now, when you took up the cause of Tupac Shakur, knowing you, you weren't doing it on a hunch just because he said, I'm bringing my 6 million fans up to Washington. You had to have some kind of information that made you think the government killed him.
Yes, well, I knew that he was under, well, of course, with his mother and his father figure, Mutulu Shakur, being who they are in the era of the 1960s and what that meant, then one of the sad facts is that the Panther children, the children of the Black Panthers, they were called the Cubs.
Oh,
and they were surveilled even as in elementary school. So, and Tupac was a part of that surveillance. And I've spoken to fellow recording artists of that genre who have informed me that they live with Tupac. And every month, some white guy would come and question them about what Tupac was doing, what he was thinking.
Wow.
How
exactly did Tupac die?
He was shot. And of course, you know, here's the thing. Because of my understanding, having read many of the pages, probably most of the pages of the COINTELPRO papers, which is like thousands of pages. But in particular, the treatment that was accorded to the Black Panther Party. And basically, I should use Paulo Freire's term, mechanisms of oppression that was used by the U.S. government was the divide and rule stratagem. So what the Black Panthers were subjected to was a rivalry of between the East Coast and the West Coast. So this kind of thing was going on inside the Black Panther Party itself, but also with the Black Panther Party and other revolutionary Black organizations. So what happened in hip hop was an exact replay of what happened with the Black Panthers, the East Coast, West Coast rivalry, which piqued my interest because I understood what had happened, one, during the 1960s with the Panthers. Two, I also understood that the U.S. government operates on playbooks. And so they'll run a screenplay to death as long as they can score a few yards with it. And so they've got the screenplay, they've got the draw play, they've got the Hail Mary pass. And you once you've seen them, then you kind of get to understand, oh, okay, they're running a screenplay, they're running a draw, they're running. So you can look at the formation and understand exactly what the U.S. government is doing. And I came to be able to detect it, to see it, to decipher it. And so at the moment when the East Coast, West Coast thing took its, was at its highest, that's when I also discovered that the all of the hip hop artists were under surveillance. It's the same kind of surveillance that Paul Robeson was subjected to. And of course, we know in the end that even the doctor that Paul Robeson went to was an MKUltra doctor. So I befriended Paul Robeson Jr. I befriended Afeni Shakur. And then there are some others who have studied, like Constantine studied Jimi Hendrix. And of course, I have discussed this for a long time.
Cynthia, I'm going to send you John Potash's book because he has some unbelievable information there. Now, when you were in Congress, it must have been a shock to some of your associates. I mean, they might have said to you, I sort of can understand why you want the files, the CIA files on Martin Luther King, but Tupac Shakur. What did other Black members of Congress or the Senate say to you? Did you have any allies at all? And did some of them say to you privately, Cynthia, I agree with you, but I just don't want to get involved?
Well, I had a lot. let's put it this way. Congress is not the place to go to find cartilage and a backbone. And so, you know, you don't even have jellyfish there. I had one member of the Congressional Black Caucus say to me, Cynthia, you just have to understand, when the leadership tells us to do something, we're going to do it. That comment was made to me by a very outspoken, in quotation marks, member of Congress who, and the issue was Hurricane Katrina. If members of the Congressional Black Caucus don't act on Hurricane Katrina, then you know they're not going to act on something as you know, kind of esoteric or whatever, but it's really fundamental. Tupac Shakur, I was laughed at in the media. And then, of course, once you get the public stigma and the ridicule, then nobody wants to associate with you. So no matter how right or even righteous your cause might be, the ridicule from the wrong people distances other people, causes people, particularly political people, to run as fast as they can away from you.
Well, it is sad to know that amongst black and whites in Congress, there's equality in cowardice. That's really disheartening.
That's right.
Tell me about, I love all things Cynthia McKinney. You did a recent interview with William Pepper on his book, A Plot to Kill the King. Tell me about that and how long you've been doing that wonderful thing. And I just, you know, I love everything about you. I didn't even know you did that until recently.
Oh, well, you know, you can't be from Georgia. You can't be interested in the COINTELPRO program of the U.S. government without taking a very strong interest in the assassination. I call it the murder because that's what it was.
Yes.
Of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And that's why I love you, because you have not relented on JFK, which, you know, I don't know how many coups we have had in the United States, but certainly that was one of them.
There's
I'm talking
no
about JFK
about
now. And so the perpetrators of that crime, that conspiracy, if they're not living now, they died natural deaths, or they're still alive. And this is more than 50 years later. With Dr. King, it's 49 years later. And in 1999, a jury of 6 blacks and 6 whites found that the United States government was complicit, a conspirator in the murder of Dr. King. And only one news person was in the room at the time. And he's still employed by the Commercial Appeal as an investigative journalist. And that's why on my, your trailer is featured on the front page of my website, allthingscynthiamckinney.com, because
oh,
the media.
Oh, you're a sweetheart.
The media assassinated JFK the second time, just as you say in your trailer, and I can't wait for the full documentary to come out. And they continue to do it. And because we didn't take care of business, we, the people of the United States, didn't take care of business in 1963, look at what we have now with the proliferation of fake news from all of the people that were called in the COINTELPRO papers. The COINTELPRO papers mentions names, mentions media outlets that were under the sway of the government, and look at it now.
And one of the things that will stun you in the film, you mentioned that some of them may be alive. Dan Rather is alive. He is the first one to really have lied to us about the headshot, throwing the head forward. George Bush is still alive. The code name for the Bay of Pigs operation was Operation Zapata, which was the name of his oil company. One of the boats was Barbara, which was his wife. Well, that indicates that the CIA used the code name of somebody who had to be very prominent in the CIA. Bill Moyers is the guy who removed the bubble top from the limousine on the orders of Lyndon Johnson. And of course, you have Barack Obama, who was in office for 8 years, who never signed what you wanted them to sign, which was the release of all the files. We have created a 10 most wanted poster, which I delivered to the Justice Department because it's still an open case. Now, you had this wonderful William Pepper, who was the attorney at that trial that you mentioned in Georgia that found that the government was complicit in the murder of Martin Luther King. Where can people go to listen to that fabulous interview?
Well, that's a darn good question. You know why, John? Because I spent all day yesterday, my time, which would have been about 3 o'clock in the morning, your time. Uh-huh. So that would be literally all day today, your time, trying to upload the interview to sites that I know where community radio stations download programs. No success. Couldn't upload it to my website. Couldn't upload it anywhere. So it's just languishing. I'm just
Let me tell you something, Cynthia. I have the interview on my Facebook. I have a fella in, his name is David Lispy. He's in Thailand. He inherited $500,000 2 years ago and moved his family to Thailand. He is a computer genius. When the FBI or the cops would arrest somebody who tried to trash their computer because they were caught in a crime, they would call David and he would recover the information. I will send him the link and I guarantee you he will find a half a dozen great sites where he can upload this. The other thing is, my movie opens May 26th at the Beverly, the Musical Theater in Beverly Hills. The day it opens, I will send you a private link to the film so that you don't have to buy it or go anywhere. You can just sit in your, you can get up at 5 o'clock in the morning before class and then you can watch it. I will also, and then to your mother, because I don't have your address in Bangladesh, I will send your mother the John Potash's book. I'll send two, one for her and one for her to forward to you. So in the meantime, where can folks go to read your wonderful stuff?
Well, to read my stuff, they can go to my website, allthingscynthiamckinney.com. But let me tell you one more thing that happened with respect to the William Pepper interview that I'm still hoping to get online somewhere before April 4th. In his new book, Plot to Kill King.
Right.
He names names.
Yes, I read it.
It's a tell-all. Okay, so at the point when I was determined to discuss names, right? Who are those names that betrayed Dr. King? My internet went out. The internet went out, and I have two sources. So I disconnected, connected to the second source. That one went out as well.
Oh, my God.
Was not able to discuss. It doesn't matter, though, because everyone is going to buy that book so they can know. Of course, I hosted William Pepper when I was in the Congress, and he was there with Judge Joe Brown, William Pepper. Actually, I have the DVD of that, which I should make public. It was an 8-hour conference, I guess you would call it. I had Judge Joe Brown, William Pepper, Phil Mellonson,
Since you have that, couldn't you upload it to C-SPAN since it's from Congress? That 8 hours?
They did. Well, you know, I probably could not upload it to C-SPAN because C-SPAN, I did a press conference and C-SPAN came, dedicated cameras to the press conference. The press conference was with Yuri Avnery talking about Israel-Palestine.
Uh-oh.
And but because Yuri Avnery's voice is not appreciated, then they set the TV cameras and then refused to post it online anywhere.
Oh,
C-SPAN is a part of the neocon deep state, just like the rest of the corporate media. In fact, C-SPAN is the corporate media because it's all the cable companies.
Well, I must tell you, I would love, you're a national treasure. You're an international treasure now that you're in Bangladesh. And I would love you to come back again before my film is released. And I just, Cynthia, you're just amazing. You're just amazing. Well, I just love you so much.
You know, I would love to be there. May 29th, you say?
May 26th is a Friday. The 29th happens to be John Kennedy's 100th birthday. But let me tell you something. If you wanted to come, I am sure that I have enough friends who would chip in to help pay for your flight if you wanted to come.
Well, I do want to come. Let me see if I have any classes. And if I don't, you know, I think that might be during the semester break. If it is, I might be able to do something. So let's stay in touch on that. I would love to be there.
It would mean not only so much to me to have it. First of all, no matter how much you think you know about the assassination, and there are thousands of people who know all kinds of stuff, they are going to be literally stunned at what they learn in this film. And it's one of the comments that I had on Facebook today is that there are laughs in the movie, and it's 2 hours long. So you wonder how on earth you could have laughter in such a dark, depressing subject. But the film is meant for millennials. A 16-year-old black kid said to me, "Thank God we need something so I can understand what happened then." He wasn't even born, Cynthia, and he's interested in the murder of John Kennedy. And there are hundreds of thousands of people like that. Cynthia, we will be in touch, and I promise you, it would mean more to me and everybody who is interested in this subject to have somebody of your proven stature and courage to be present at the opening. And you will not have to pay for anything. I will find a way to do it for you. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much, John. Thank you.
Give my best to Coy, and I will be talking to you soon. And you'll be back on the air with me within a month. Okay?
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Have a great day in class. I love you. We'll be right back.
Okay. Bye-bye.
With Joe Satilli.
Great music from all the greatest performers from sunup to sundown.
How do you keep the music playing?
At last.
Well, beyond the sea.
Great talk all night. The mysteries of UFOs, conspiracy theories, and the true story of Las Vegas that has never been told.
There are three ways to listen to KIYQ. Go to the TuneIn app, just search for KIYQ, or go to www.kiyq.org. Listen from any telephone, call 605-477-2857. That's 605-477-2857. Long distance charges may apply.
KIYQ 107.1.
Hi, this is John Barber of John Barber's World every other Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific right here on VBS Radio. I'm telling you about a terrific show, The New Criminal Minds, with outstanding actor Gary Sinise, called Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. A tough drama about a special unit of the FBI involved in protecting Americans who are beyond borders. It follows the regular Criminal Minds, airing every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central. Don't miss it. Gary Sinise is outstanding.
Hi, I'm Richard Valzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
Thank you.
for that smile upon your face, oh sunny.
Hi, this is John Barber. You may remember me as the co-host, producer, and creator of Real People, America's first reality show, or most recently as the writer-director of what's been called the definitive documentary on JFK's murder, The Last Word on the Assassination. Now I'm doing a show every other Monday from 5 to 6 Pacific Time on BBS. You'll hear provocative views, unreported news, and film reviews from me, with outstanding guests and you. Join me on John Barber's World.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Those of you who have an ongoing interest in the JFK assassination might want to know about this. TV producer John Barber. He put together a dream team of JFK researchers, including Coast regular Jim Mars and world-class JFK writers Dick Russell and Joan Mellon. They all got together at UNLV in front of a live audience. They had a screening of Barber's terrific, and I'd say historic, film based on interviews with prosecutor Jim Garrison of New Orleans. And then after the film was shown, the experts all talked about the latest JFK theories and evidence. It's now out on a DVD. Terrific stuff. I'm George Knack, Coast to Coast AM.
Welcome back to John Barber's World. That was just a glorious interview with Cynthia McKinney. She truthfully is such a treasure. And for her, she has this, you know, all things Cynthia McKinney. It's a site that's listened to by hundreds of thousands of people. And she took my trailer for my movie and put it as the front piece of her site. So what I'm going to try to do now is I'm going to try to play the audio just of this 1 minute trailer for you, and then introduce my very favorite journalist and my cohort and partner, Joe Sottile. So hang on, here we try this.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
I think there had to be assurance that there would be, at least at the outset, a few elements of the media that would be cooperative from the beginning, because they had to start off with a certain momentum from the beginning before reality started to interfere with the building of the illusion.
His head could be seen to move violently forward.
An element of the Central Intelligence Agency of our country killed John Kennedy.
You know Oswald did it. He did it.
Is he serious?
On November 22nd, 1963, not only did John Kennedy die, it's also the day America's free press died. They became proven aiders, abettors, and protectors of the known murderers of President John F. Kennedy.
Learn why, when, and how our media became corrupted in the most important American movie since JFK, the American media and the second assassination of President John F. Kennedy, a movie you will never forget.
You know that I'm always quoting Mark Twain, and I guess for good reason, because there was never anyone who was Mark Twain's equal. You could take Neil Simon and George Carlin and all the great comedy writers of America, and all their best works together would not equal three pages of Mark Twain's greatest quotes. And one of the other quotes that I just absolutely love of his, talking about how confident somebody was, he said he's as confident as a Christian holding four aces.
Well, I will. How about this? I will give you one challenger, not really a challenger, but a close facsimile in the prominent art form of the 20th century in the United States, and that would be Paddy Chayefsky.
Yes, just because of his movie Network. There's no question about that. Every line in that is a gem, but it does not equal the humor of right. What Mark Twain says. And you might describe me as the guy that Mark Twain is talking about when he says he's as confident as a Christian holding four aces. is because with this film, Joe, I must tell you, people will be absolutely on their feet, often, maybe even during the body of the film. And of course, you were a major contributor to the film.
Oh, no, 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 no. And this is I'm glad you did this, because I wanted to spend today's segment talking to you, turning the tables a little bit and asking you a couple of questions. And one of the questions that has occurred to me, look, you know this thing backwards and forwards. You've lived it over the course of much of your adult life. And you went back into the process. You laid down the tracks. You did the editing. You wrote it. Was there anything coming back to it now, after all these years of swimming in this topic, was there anything that took you aback or that surprised you when you went through the long editing process of putting the film together?
The thing that surprised me the most were the quotations and the comments from Jim Garrison about the media that I never noticed in 1981 on September 5th when I did the 3-hour interview. And the reason for that being was, I guess, I was a co-producer and creator of the number one show in America, Real People. I was making an enormous amount of money in the media. I was interested in his story as a Real People story. Not that I was so involved with the assassination. It was just a great Errol Gardner murder mystery, you know, and that's right. Why I was there. So I ignored a lot of the stuff he was talking about in the media, totally ignored it. But when I went back 8 months ago and I took out the 3 hours and reviewed it, I was staggered by what he observed about the media. And that's so that excited me more and more. And the more I got into it, the more I realized I was making an extremely contemporary film, which, God bless Donald Trump, he is helping make more topical every day by talking about fake news. But you can ask me anything you want, you know, because I will tell you.
Well, here's a question, a follow-up on that. Okay. Do you think that, you know, you said you were entranced by the murder mystery of it, the story of it. Do you think that one of the, not the problems, but the sort of the rabbit holes that people find themselves going down is haggling over the minutiae, the details of the assassination, and not the meaning of the assassination?
Oh, listen, I must tell you, all these assassination sites are just drowning us in trivia. Who's the guy in the book depository? Did the shots come from the South? No, it is all meaningless. I mean, I've had a number of people ask me if I was going to go back to Judith Berry Baker's JFK conference in November. And I said, no, absolutely not. Not until these people hold their conferences on November 22nd in front of the Justice Department, where it's still a cold case, but uninvestigated as instructed by Congress when they turned it over to the House Select Committee. They are all sewing circles. They are all book clubs. They had nothing to do with the real research into the assassination and the murder of John Kennedy. And those people alive today who should be arrested and questioned for it. I mean, Mae Brussel says that we have this clip from Mae Brussel, who was on the air. She was on the air with Mark Lane, was in print, by far the most knowledgeable person on the planet, about the assassination. And she said, it's not just the killers, but those in the media who promoted and protected the killers. And that's one of the clips that we have. There are things in this thing that will stagger people. And to show you on a very simple level, we are Dan Jacobs, who was the genius who helped turn this into what they call a digital cinema package, which allows us to get it into the theaters for Oscar consideration, has two friends, Emily. One of them is named Emily, the other is Kelly. They're two ladies who have a successful PR firm. And I'm trying to engage them in town to help me, because I like dealing with people I can look at rather than somebody maybe in L.A. I screened the documentary. Now, Emily is a very attractive, knowledgeable brunette, a former anchor lady, and a major in journalism. She was like maybe 12 or 14 minutes into the film, and she started gasping. And guess what she was gasping at? She was gasping at the fact that she did not know that in 1963 in America, a company could only own 5 television stations. But thanks to Bill Clinton in 1993, whenever he signed the Communications Act, now 95% of all media are owned by 5 or 6 corporations. She could not believe there was once a fairness doctrine. She could not believe that there was equal time. Now, here is somebody in her late 30s who is a journalist and didn't know this. That just has to do with the media. But when it comes to the business of the killing and how it was covered up and the people in the media, we have all these clips and they speak for themselves. So it's not me saying, hey, look at this jerk. The guy appears as a jerk from what it is that he says. So there you go.
Well, you know, and I just wrote a piece for Consortium News on Les Moonves and Donald Trump. And Moonves said famously last summer that Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he sure is good for CBS. And Donald Trump has actually been very good for the entire media. As a matter of fact, CNN is on track to have $1 billion year. They've never had $1 billion year profit margin coming up this year. And that, you know, all of the cable outlets have doubled their ratings. Well, here's this thing. Moonves, after Donald Trump talked about his proclivity to grab a woman by the genitals, Moonves said, oh, well, I was just kidding about the being good for CBS thing. Well, he really wasn't, but he was doing that because he doesn't want to mess with his key demographics. So he then went to another, the first time he said it at a, I think it was a JP Morgan hosted telecommunications industry conference. And then a couple months ago, about 9 weeks ago, he went to a Deutsche Bank hosted telecommunications and media conference. And it's interesting that Deutsche Bank is Donald Trump's number one creditor. Donald Trump owes Deutsche Bank $300 million. And actually, Deutsche Bank right now is in trouble. They're being investigated for laundering money for drug dealers and Russian mafia. So here's Les Moonves at this thing. And he says, once again, well, we're really high on Donald Trump and the coming of Donald Trump because we anticipate further deregulation, which would allow us to own even more stations in one market. So if you can't, I mean, if she's blown away by that, there is relevance in what you are putting in this film, because even now, at a time when, John, you and I cannot imagine that there's anything left to deregulate, guys like Les Moonves are salivating over their Caesar salads at a conference over the idea of getting even more media concentration.
At the top of the show, Joe, I mentioned that America would have to improve considerably just to be a mess. And the reason I said that is because in your news, Vandal, today, there's this wonderful article you have by Chris Hedges talking about drugs and gambling. I'm sorry that we're running out of time, but could we close the last few minutes of the show talking about that particular article, which is wonderful, and thank goodness that you have it in your news, Vandal.
Well, you can go to it today. It's called Nation of the Walking Dead. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about the opioid crisis. And the opioid crisis is really decimating much of America, and particularly rural America and white suburban America, where people are loading up on these opioids. And it's really about this idea that we are sort of zombies walking into this apocalypse and we are being drugged along the way. Unfortunately, I think we are running out of time, John, but I would suggest people just go to newsvandal.com and get the rundown, and you'll get stories like that 5 days a week. If not, go to Truth Dig. That's truthdig.com, and Chris Hedges' piece is right there on the front page. And it's both sobering and kind of disheartening, but in a way it's refreshing because it's filled with truth.
Well, one of the truths was something like 33,000 people a year die from the overdose from these things.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that you mentioned in the article was the gambling. Of course, I live in the gambling mecca in Vatican, which is Las Vegas. And it's appallingly sad, but it's important information. So again, where can they get it? And I'll tell you what else I'm going to do. I am not going to book a guest for the next show. What I would like to do is the next time you come on, we're going to do a whole show together, and we will go through every one of the articles that we can in your News Vandal.
Oh, you on that particular day? You just want to go through them all?
Yeah, I want to go through them all because you deserve it, and the audience deserves it. The stuff you bring to light is just fantastic. So,
well, I mean, this is the thing, John, is that people should take heart. Your film is being made, and I find every day there is quality news and information and journalism being done. It's just a matter of getting to it and getting past all of the chaff and getting right to the wheat. You can get past the chaff and you can get to the wheat, just like your film, which is a great example of a hearty meal that everybody needs to eat. It's coming soon, right?
That's right, May 26th, and I'm about to give you the shaft because we have run out of time. But the next show is just going to be you and I talking about News Vandal. Joe, thank you very much. I want to thank Cynthia again. I want to thank Mike, Kim, my producers, and the Newsom brothers who run BBS. Thank you all, folks. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Good night and good luck.
You're my spark of me. Fire, you're my sweet, complete desire. A sunny, 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 I love you.